Today we're talking about what's true about you. Because not everything that you think about yourself is true. Not everything that others have thought about you is true also. But if you choose to believe the wrong things, it can negatively affect the way you see the world, and it can limit your ability to give and receive love on this earth. So let's figure out what's true about you. Good morning again. Alrighty. So nice to see you guys here today. Did you know that the average human being has 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts a day? Some of those thoughts are pretty remedial. Did I close the garage door before I left for work that day? Oh darn it, I forgot to bring the new soap, the bar of soap in the shower. But most of them are not thoughts that are pleasant. And that's a lot of thoughts. For some of us, those thoughts are, I don't have what it takes. For some of us, it's, you have no place being here today in this room. For some of us, it's, I'll never get healthy. I'll never break this addiction. Or my marriage or my children will never grow up to be anything great. And there's no age limit on these type of thoughts. If you were my 80-year-old grandfather 10 years ago, you were told that this is it for you. You were told that you've got stage 3 cancer, and it's a bad one. It's not recoverable. And it's just time to say goodbye. Or when I was a teenager, a friend of mine's father said that I would be nothing more than just a boy who grew up to go to a bar every night and come home with a different girl. And nothing more. Or, if you were my son just a couple months ago at age 9, you came up to me before bedtime and you said, "Daddy, did you plan me? Was I a mistake?" I'll give you a little bit of background on that one. I met my son's mom and wasn't in a great place in my life. She got pregnant, we got married, he was born, and we got divorced. Like that. And somehow a 9-year-old boy is wrestling with that question. So you can imagine, out of those 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts that we have a day, and a lot of them aren't great, it would be really great if we could figure out what was true about those things. Because some of them aren't true. And if we believe the wrong things, it changes the way we see the world. And it affects our ability to give and receive love on this earth. So today we're going to do a little practice lesson in trying to use a core principle in walking into figuring out what's true about us so that we can kind of combat these thoughts every day. And the good fortune is that being that we're a Christian, or if you're not sure if you're Christian, hang in there with me. You're going to find out something pretty cool about this whole process. That we get to ask God what's true about Him first. And the neat thing about that is that of all the things that God created, He made us in His image. So we get to have that starting point. We get to ask Him first. Okay, God, I got a lot of thoughts, and I would really love to know what's true and what's false. I'd like to start by finding out what's true about You. So, God's pretty clever in that way, that He gave us an inspired text that He knew in order for us to walk this journey, it had to be written by people who saw Him firsthand and got to feel it in its innermost truth. And what I'm about to read from 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 through 8, is from a guy who spent time with Jesus at the most crucial time in Jesus' life. And if you watch the movie Son of God, that movie got it right, because there's a couple scenes where John just looks at Jesus and he's got these tears in his eyes. And they're tears of joy and tears of fear almost, because it's almost in those moments that Jesus is looking at him and saying, "You get it, John, don't you? You get it." And I think John was like, "Yeah, I do." A little freaked out about it, to be honest with you. "I do." And I think in those moments, Jesus was like, "You'll be the one to write about Me. You'll be the one to be able to say what's the true about Me at my innermost foundation and my core." So let's take a real quick look at what John says in 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 through 8, where he says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. For whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. And anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love." I don't know about you, but if I was ever on the fence with this whole God thing, I would be able to get on board with that. That at least what potentially is true about me is that God is love. I'd like to think that I could try to go after these questions with love. However, I think I'd like to know a little bit more detail, being that we're all human beings and a little flawed. And I think that Jesus knew that too. And so Jesus thought, "I need one more person to write about Me again in a little bit more detail." Oh, thank you. Am I sticking up there? Oh, no, that's too... Oh. Doesn't look pleasant. All right. So I think he said, "I need one more person to write about Me so that people can navigate this question." And so I have this vision. It's make-believe, you know. Maybe it was true. But I feel like after God, after Jesus died and came back, spent time with the apostles, and then He left again, I think He was up there in heaven. He's hanging out with the angels. And He's looking down. He's trying to figure out who would be the right person. Who's the right person? Who's going to be able to define My love about who I am? And I think He looked down and He said, "That's the guy right there." And I think all the angels probably paused for a minute and said, "Jesus, I know You're God, so I'm going to have a hard time contesting You on this. But You do know He's the biggest Pharisee of all Pharisees. He's the king of all Pharisees. In fact, actually, He hates You so much that He's trying to kill Christianity. And not just kill and imprison people who are trying to be a part of Your movement, but I mean, he's going to, he has, and He's trying to kill them physically. So I just want to check in with you, Jesus. Is that the one you want? And I think Jesus said, oh yeah. He's the one. And he's on his way to Damascus right now to do some more damage. So I'm going to go hook up with him so he can experience the real life me. And then we'll see what we can do there. And we'll see what he writes about me. So let's see what Paul, formerly Saul of Tarsus, wrote. And he wrote this in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. Love is patient. It's kind. Love does not envy. It doesn't boast. It's not proud. Doesn't dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. Keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, trusts, it hopes, it perseveres, and it never fails. So I take that verse and I say, God, my son wants to know if he's a mistake. Well, that doesn't sound terribly kind. That's a good start there. Not very protecting. Not a whole lot of hope to live a life if you are a mistake. So those are the things that you are and that you made man to be. That was your intention. But I think in these words, it's also saying what it's not. So let's check it out and see what it's not. So it also says that it doesn't envy. It's not boastful. It's not proud. There's no dishonor in it. Not self-seeking. Not easily angered. Definitely keeps no record of wrongs. And it doesn't delight in evil. Now look at those words. And I know that what those thoughts were, I'm thinking, there's a lot of dishonor in that. And can you imagine trying to keep a record of that wrong the rest of your life? So that's a good starting point for us to ask the next step. So we've started to diagnose a thought in our mind to determine whether or not it sinks in and it lives with us for the rest of our lives. So there's a two-step process now that we do, now that we know this. So the question is, how does this help me with my everyday thoughts? And step one is we take our question to Jesus. There's no one more qualified to answer that question. It's as simple as that. And if you're not sure how you feel about God, that's okay. Okay, because what I encourage you to do is if at any point you believe in this whole thing called love, maybe just find somebody who believes in the definition of that love and ask them the question. And then if it works out really well for you, I encourage you to ask them why they believe that. So we take our question to Jesus. My grandfather, when he was in his early 80s, diagnosed with the stage 3 cancer, the doctor said, it's over. Time has come to an end. Go ahead and, you know, just get your goodbyes in. He took his question to Jesus. And Jesus said, well, Bill, first of all, I'm really proud of you. You've done a lot of good on this earth. And I want you to look at this both ways first, before anything. First thing I want you to know is that if I do take you, you'll get to see your mom for the first time, who gave you life by losing hers. Also, I want you to know, Bill, that you started off as one child and you had a big family and dozens of grandchildren. And they all know me. And they know my love. And lastly, Bill, I want you to know one thing. There is nothing impossible with me. There is a requirement, though. I need you to believe. I need you to believe. Maybe someday, if we're lucky, I will come to church here someday. You'll get to meet him. Because God had more plan for him. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, that's a lot to unpack right there. It starts with belief, taking your question to Jesus. But I got to be honest with you. It still seems really, really hard, right? Some of this we already kind of know. 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts, right? Whew. There's a lot going on there. Why does it seem so hard? And what I'm about to tell you next is absolutely critical. If there's anything that you take away from this, I want you to take away one thing. That you have an enemy. Not all those thoughts are your own. Not all those thoughts are God's. You have an enemy. And his plan was to kill, steal, and destroy you. But in order to understand the depth of your enemy, you need to understand the greater story that you're a part of. You see, your story starts in part 3 of a 4-part saga. And the first part was God creating the heaven and the earth and the stars and the galaxies, mountains and the oceans. And it was beautiful. And there was harmony, and there was angels, and there was gloriousness. God loved his angels, and he loved one of his angels most. He was the ultimate beauty. His name was Lucifer. We know him as Satan. And then part 2 took place. And that's when Satan and a third of the angels staged a coup against God, thinking that he could take over. The power. And then there was a colossal, galactic, bigger than any Hollywood star, battle that you could ever imagine. Michael and his angels, soaring axes, just dismantling war of all wars. And a third of the angels were thrown to earth. You can read about it in Revelations. John wrote about it. And then part 3 came. And God created us. It's a little bit brutal. It's like, wow, he created us. But he created us because he loves us so much that he had a plan for us to be a part of his victory. But the evil one is very deceptive. And he'll do whatever it takes to kill you because he's jealous of you. And he hates the fact that God loves you. So we're going to take a real quick look at another thing that John wrote here. And if we can just fire that up there. From John 8. Says that he was a murderer from the beginning. Not holding truth. Because there was no truth in him. And when he lied, he spoke in a native language. For he is a liar and the father of lies. So the opposite of who we are, love, what God was, is what our enemy is. And he does it so deceptively. And like I said before, he has no age discrimination. We're going to show a clip real quick about how vicious and horrible that discrimination looks like.
What is that?
It's your file. Send it back to the judge for evaluation.
Oh. You're not gonna fail me, are you? What's it say?
Wanna read it?
Why? Have you had any experience with that?
20 years of counseling. Yeah, I've seen some pretty awful.
I mean, have you had any experience with that?
Personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Sure ain't good.
My father was an alcoholic. He'd come home hammered, looking to wail on somebody. So I'd provoke him so he wouldn't go after my mother and little brother. Interesting nights were when he wore his rings.
Yeah, he used to just put a wrench, a stick, and a belt on the table and just say, choose.
Well, I gotta go with the belt there, Vanna.
I used to go with the wrench.
Your foster father.
Yeah. So, what is it, like, Will has an attachment disorder? Is it all that stuff? Fear of abandonment? Is that why I broke up with Skylar?
I didn't know you had.
I did.
You want to talk about it?
No.
Hey, Will. I don't know a lot. You see this? This is not your fault.
Yeah, I know that.
Look at me, son. It's not your fault.
I know.
It's not your fault.
I know.
No, you don't. It's not your fault.
I know.
It's not your fault.
All right.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Wow. It's pretty tough, huh? It's hard to watch. Will was a brilliant man, or I guess a young man at that time in the story. And he worked as a janitor at Harvard. And when the teachers would put impossible math problems and questions up on the board, When the buildings were closed, he'd go in there and solve the problems. Could have maybe cured cancer. Could have changed the world in a way that you never know. But somebody knew what his potential looked like, what God created in him. And he took dead aim at him from the day he was born. Growing up in a fatherless and motherless environment, unable to be present to the reality and depth of what true love feels like and looks like. And it started early. And it started often, from foster home to foster home. To the point where he was a young man and he believed that the beatings were his fault. Now I want to leave you here today with a little bit of hope, because there was something else that happened in that video that I want you to take heed to. Robin Williams, who plays the psychologist who was appointed to him, is the example of God speaking truth against and into the lie. And here's the cool thing, that when God planned us without even having to choose Him as our Savior, we were image bearers. So the story of truth and the reality of God's truth is true in us. And then there's a step two. And the step two is how we become spirit bearers. You see, when we choose Jesus Christ as our Lord, and we let it sink in all the way, we become and we receive the Spirit of God. And we get to do just what Robin Williams did there. We get to rescue. We get to speak truth against the lies. We get to take dead aim at Satan and everything he's tried to do and take him out. I told you earlier that when I was a late teenager, a friend of mine's father said that I would be nothing more than just a guy who grew up and went to a bar every night and came home with a new girl. I came home that day pretty dejected. And I was in a rough place in my life, fighting a really deep struggle that maybe someday I'll share with you. And I was ready to believe that. But my father got wind of that. And I will never forget it to this day. I was sitting at the bottom of the steps, looking up in fear, not knowing what's going to happen as my father took the phone at the top of the steps and called that man. And he said, "Don't you know that you can destroy someone with your words? Or you can script them for greatness. Don't you know? You don't know, my boy. But I do." He was made from love and for love. And the only thing that he's ever going to become is what God decides he will be. That's the power. When you choose Jesus Christ. And so here I am. It's almost bedtime. My wife is brushing her teeth. We're getting ready to do our 30-minute routine where we snuggle and watch SpongeBob for a few minutes before my son goes to bed. And my son asked me the question. So I wrap my arms around him, not really 100% knowing what I'm going to say. But then I say, "Colton, you know the stars in the sky and the mountains and the ocean that we like to go swim in and all the amazing, beautiful things that we've seen and the dinosaurs that we've watched countless documentaries about. Before all of that, God planned you. And you want to know something else? When I was a little boy, I wanted to be just like my daddy. And before I ever met your mom, I wanted you." So we get to be spirit bearers. That's what we get to be when we choose Christ. If there's a pivotal moment right now in your life where you're on the fence, don't you want this power? Don't you want this opportunity to live a life for joy and love and to be able to see the people that you love and script them for God's greatness, for what they plan? We're going to watch one last clip. Now, nope, let's go ahead and pause that real quick. We're close. You can see. I'll give you a little bit of a warm-up here. We've seen a lot of things in our life that have been examples of good versus evil. We've seen the wars, the Holocaust. We've seen the depth and the destruction of evil. In 1980, there was an Olympics that were taking place in the United States. And at the time, there was a lot of fear in the world, especially in the United States, the fear of Cold War. And Russia kind of represented that fear of whether or not they were going to use nuclear war. And if you ever lived it, you know what that felt like. And so there was this thing brewing that you didn't really know, but we like to look into the movies, we look into sports, and we see moments where we think, oh man, well, if we could just win, maybe that gives us hope in other areas of our life too, maybe this fear. And the Olympic Russian team at the time hadn't lost a game in 20 years. They had just got done beating the NHL's All-Stars, smacking them, just destroying them. And here we are going into the Olympics. And at the time, the United States did not allow professional athletes to participate. So here's a bunch of college boys going into the Olympic battle. And at any point, if they were even going to try to be victorious, they're going to run into the juggernaut, to the presence of evil and its dominance and its impending victory, it would appear. And to not give it away too much, but the United States won and beat them in the Final Four matchup to eventually go on and win the gold, what seemed to be impossible. But I believe the reason why they were able to win is because their coach, before the game started, scripted the truth about who they were and what their potential was. Now we can run the clip.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
See, our story isn't much different than this story. except for the fact that it's on the grandest scale. And the battlefield is our minds. And what we're fighting for is our hearts. And it's not win or lose, but rather it is life or death. And if Jesus were in this room today, and I know he is, I think he would tell you that great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here today. That's what I died for. For this moment, right here. And if you try to fight against Satan's lies, and try to overcome your hurts, your hang-ups, without me, well, Satan might just win every time. But not this time. Not today. Today you stay in the fight for as long as it takes, and you take him down. Because this time, I'm with you. And I will bring you victory. Today you become the fierceness and the truth of God. You were born for this. And you were meant to be here today. This is who you are. This is your story. And it is a victory. This is your time because this was my Father's time. Satan's time is done. It's over. I am sick and tired of hearing about failed marriages, neglected children, the church's denial of the severity and reality of spiritual warfare. And I'm sick and tired of seeing Satan's destruction on this earth. It's over. Pardon my French, but screw him. The price has been paid on the cross. The victory is already won. If only you would just believe. That's the doorway. This is your time. And now you need to go out and take it. Let's pray.